scripture passage today that we hear from the lectionary is one that comes from the Gospel of Luke. It really has two stories in it, and it asks in you to keep both stories in mind as they play one off of the other. The reading that I share with you today is a translation from David Buttrick. Listen for the word of the Lord. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But Jesus answered him, "Man, who appointed me your judge or arbiter?" And he said to them, "Look out, keep yourselves from all forms of greed, for life is not measured by the stuff we possess." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced a huge harvest. Debating within himself, he said, 'What'll I do? I don't have anywhere to store my produce.' And then he said, 'I know what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger barns. And I will store all my grain and all my goods. And I will say to myself, self, you've got goods laid up for years to come. Take it easy. Eat, drink, be happy.' But God said to him, 'You fool, tonight yourself will be demanded from you. And who will get the stuff you have piled up?'" That's the way it goes with those who treasure up for themselves and are not rich toward God. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. It's a wonderful story on National Public Radio yesterday. It was a story about a physician who had spent a good part of the last half of his career studying the placebo effect. You know, the placebo effect where you explore how people's minds really influence how they get well. Well, he was inspired to study the placebo effect because when he was young, something happened to him. He had been challenged with a number of cases that were difficult, and he decided in exasperation to try to hypnotize his patients to help them with their pain management and recovery. And it had gone very well for him. And then one day he heard of a case that was going on down the hall. This other doctor, a surgeon, was about to perform a skin graft on this young boy who was covered head to foot with thousands of warts. So this young doctor went down to see this case, and as he looked at him, he was rather horrified at what he saw, and what he said to the other doctor who was about to perform the skin graft, he said, "You know, you might want to do some hypnotism on this kid to see if that works." Well, the other doctor, I think, was kind of looking for an out, so he, in exasperation, he threw up his hands and says, "You want him hypnotized? You hypnotize him." And he walked away. That young doctor, in his naivete and arrogance, he did hypnotize this patient. And this is a true story. It was on NPR. It has to be true, right? He did hypnotize him, and the warts on his arm, and he told him it was going to happen to his arm, the warts on his arm went away. He came back a week later, and it was this rosy, pink, healthy flesh on his arm. He was so amazed, he showed it to other doctors, and word got around, and he ended up going to this national conference. And the head of this national conference, as this young boy was brought out on stage, well, he looked at the boy and he said, "Well, this is not warts. This is," and he named some disease that I don't have the security clearance to name, okay? But he named the disease and said, "And this is a disease that has never been cured before. It is impossible to cure this." And the young doctor heard it. The young doctor who did the hypnotism, he heard it. And he said, "Impossible incurable, and he was never able to cure another case. Now, maybe that's just a quirky story. That could be. But it does raise the question, how do you see the world? How many things do you see are impossible, incurable, hopeless? Sally McFaig says the unknown lies all around us, and we figure it out with human metaphors. Metaphors are the way we investigate the universe. In other words, what you believe is what you will perceive. We live by our stories, we believe by what we perceive. So the question is, what do you believe about Jesus? We hear a story today. Two brothers having a fight with one another. They had inherited some goods from a relative. We don't know exactly who the relative was. We don't know exactly what it was that the relative gave to them. I like to think it was probably a stamp collection, some photo albums, a stack of old TV guides piled up over a lifetime, and a box of baseball cards, including one signed by Babe Ruth. How do you divide the inheritance? And how many times have you heard a story like that, where a family ends up falling out with one another, a couple of siblings having a dispute about an inheritance? The family starts talking and then arguing and disputing and fussing and fighting and falling apart, and they want someone to fix it for them, and that's what's going on in this story today. So they turn to Jesus and say, Jesus, you be our judge. You be the divider in chief. Who's right? Who's wrong? Who wins? Who loses? And how much do we get? Jesus is judge, the one who judges our lives. But according to Jesus, very clearly, that is not who he is. Let me give a brief disclaimer. Not that there's anything wrong with being a judge. Some of my best friends are judges, as are yours, I'm sure. There's a time and place for judges. It's just, that's not who Jesus is. Jesus is about something else. So he opts out of that definition, not about judging them, into a way of helping them. How does he help? To start with, Jesus tells them a story. We live by our stories. What you believe is what you will perceive. Jesus tells them about a man, not just any man. Tells them about a rich man, but not just any rich man. This man owns the whole county. He is fabulously wealthy. Jesus takes us out of the story about the two squabbling individuals talking and arguing with one another to the story of just one man, a fabulously rich man who is only talking to himself. And he says, self, you've had a good year. He says to himself, yes, I have. Self, you've had a great year. Yes, I have. Self, you've had a year beyond your wildest expectations. Yes, yes, I have. Self, you're not going to add on to your barns. You're going to tear them all down. You're going to build bigger barns. They're going to hold all your wealth and all your stuff. And then you're going to kick back, relax, and take it easy. Now, if when you hear this song, you hear something of the voice of Gollum from Lord of the Rings talking to himself, you've gotten the story, you know? That's who this guy is. He's like Gollum, that hobbit who has ended up living in a cave by himself, just with him and his precious ring, his wealth. In a world alone, he goes crazy. And that's what's happened to this farmer. He's so fabulously rich, he only listens to himself. He only thinks about himself. And he's gone a little crazy. What did Nietzsche say? Possessions are usually diminished by possession because enough is never enough. He says, I'll tear down my barns. I'll build bigger and bigger barns. And you just get this sense that every year he's going to tear down more barns and build bigger ones. Except for one thing. Tonight, is the night that he will die. Notice it does not say God took his life. It doesn't say God took his life. It doesn't say that. It's really acknowledging we all have a shelf life. Don't you wish the shelf life of your life was stamped on the bottom of your foot so you knew exactly how long you were going to last and how you could manage everything? But that's not how it goes, and that's not how it was for this rich man. But the voice of God comes because this man has walled himself off in this cave of existence all by himself, and the voice of God is the only voice that can break through that wall. He breaks through the walls and helps him to see that he had imprisoned his own self in the wealth that he had accumulated. The possessions that the rich man believes will last forever, well, they won't matter a bit by the end of the night. A man will have lost the only thing that counts. By the end of the night, the only thing that counts is not his life. We all have a shelf life. By the end of the night, he'll see that the only thing that counts is being right with God. And that he will have lost by how he used his life, by how he used his wealth. God is the only one who can save him. And he's forgotten completely about God. The rich man talking to himself as if he was the only one in the world. Well, that's one story of wealth. Of course, there's other stories of wealth in the Bible. The one that is the counterpoint to that is probably the story of Joseph. You remember Joseph and his coat of many colors. Joseph who offends his brothers sell him into slavery. He goes down into Egypt. He ends up being a slave for years. But then in the grace of God, he ends up rising through the ranks to become Pharaoh's number one economic advisor. And Joseph sees that there are 7 good years, so he stores up the crops because he knows not just that Pharaoh will have needs, not that he, Joseph, will have needs, but that the people of the land will have needs. The people of other lands will have needs, and he will be ready when the time comes. He's been given a miracle. Joseph knows how to manage the miracle. That's the beauty of that story. He manages the miracle for the common good, for the lean years, and especially for the poor, as well as for other countries. You see, in the Bible, wealth is not bad. Wealth is a miracle to be managed in response to God, who cares about life being good for all of God's people. Wealth is intended to produce a sense of goodness for the community, and especially for the poor. Don Millman says, "Money is neither my God nor my devil. Money is a form of energy that tends to make us more of who we already are, whether greedy or loving." More of who we already are. To be right with God is to have a sense of what these things we have received in our life truly are. The real question is not what did you make all on your own or what did you win by good luck? The real question is, do you see your wealth as a gift of God? And what is God enabling and empowering you to do with the wealth with which you have been entrusted? I like that quote from Thoreau. Thoreau said, "A lot of people go fishing their whole lives without realizing it is not fish that they are after. In accumulating wealth, it's not the wealth itself that we're after, but a sense of connecting with the work of God, the meaning that God gives to our lives, the power of love that God gives to us. So what are you after? And who do you have in mind with the miracle that you have been given to manage?" You go back to that story of the two siblings who are squabbling over their inheritance. You think about that, and what are they really doing? But each of them has prioritized themselves. They've forgotten about their relationship. They've forgotten about the miracle that they've been given to share with others. This story raises some wonderful questions. I think that one in particular, do you see who Jesus is? That Jesus is not there to judge you. Jesus is there to help you believe the things that will allow you to perceive what in the world is going on in your life. The question is, what do you believe about your life? Do you know who you are? You are a person to whom God has given this miracle. And the question is, how will you manage the miracle with which you have been entrusted? Look at your life and see what has been given and how you will respond to God by caring for the world and caring for the poor in particular. John Calvin was the lawyer who started the Presbyterian Church all those hundreds of years ago. And lawyer John Calvin in his sermons would never have been accused of doing stand-up comedy, okay? Nevertheless, listen to what Calvin says about dividing up the church budget. Calvin says, about the church budget, you give one-fourth of the budget to the poor and one-fourth for the training and maintenance of the ministry, and one-fourth for the work of the church, and one-fourth for the poor. Calvin made a joke. Half the budget to the poor. But the thing is, we could do that. If one-quarter of our members decided that they were going to tithe, we could do that and more. Now, I know you think I'm making a joke. But you see, we have been given this miracle in our lives. We have been given this miracle to manage. In response to God, in an awareness of what in the world is going on with the people around us. How could the world change if we believed and perceived what God is doing for us? We have been given a miracle. Your life is filled with that miracle. If you believe it, you will see it, and you will be set free.